Hey everybody, welcome to another Bald Movie. Jim and I are reaching way back in the classics for the 1969 motorcycle road drama drug film Easy Rider, starring Peter Fonda, Denny Hopper, and Jackie Nicol. And Jack Nicholson is written by Fonda, Hopper, and Terry Southern. Just recently celebrated his 50th anniversary last year of being on the movies. The reason I suggested this movie is because it was on it was featured on The New Pope like 2 weeks ago.
Uh-huh.
And I'm fascinated with The New Pope and John Malkovich's portrayal of the titular New Pope. And he's described his love of Dennis Hopper as he's one of the most free people on the planet. Well, formerly on the planet. Dennis Hopper's been dead almost 10 years now. Mm. What did you think of this 50-year-old counterculture hippie biker movie, Jim? It's you're in the target demographic for this. Aim right at your heart.
Yeah, it's... I don't know much about the 60s, if I'm being honest. It was over a decade before I was born. All of the sort of films and culture of the era had sort of started to leak out of public consciousness or like reruns on television and stuff by the time I was of viewing age. Mm. So I don't know much about it, but I really like this movie.
Mm.
I came away thinking, yeah, I totally get why, even not knowing much about the 60s, why this would be a countercultural revolution.
Oh yeah.
In both filmmaking and, you know, actual culture.
Yeah.
In the country.
There's a couple of these things. There's a couple of these things that seem very modern, and it turns out that's because they're innovations, which we could talk about, like mm-hmm. the pop culture soundtrack. Like that's very, you know, feels very modern that you've got these period accurate tunes to this setting. There's a couple of things that are weird, like some of the editing and
I don't like the editing scene in this film dissolves. For the most part.
But I was amazed. I was sitting here and I'm watching this film and I'm like, okay, I see why people like this. This mm-hmm. is just, if nothing else, the visuals are gorgeous of these guys riding these bikes through the desert and camping or smoking up. And it's just kind of like watching, you know, this weird kind of art house of these guys fucking around the United States. And then Jack Nicholson shows up and mm-hmm. the movie kicks in like 12th gear.
Yeah.
Like that performance, he's already interesting in the jail as just kind of like the Southern lawyer using the good old boys network to get these hippies off the hook.
Mm-hmm.
But the second he puts on that gold football helmet and gets on the back of Captain America's motorcycle, like this movie just enters a whole other gear. And, you know, I haven't seen a lot of classic Nicholson, I gotta say. I've seen, you know, some of the modern classic stuff. Like, what was that mob movie? The Departed? The Departed. Yeah, I've seen him in that. I've seen him in, like, there's that one with Greg Kinnear.
One Flew or no, the Cuckoo's Nest?
It had Helen Hunt in it. I forget what that movie
Or
he stole the guy's dog by keeping bacon in his pocket.
Yeah, I know the movie you're talking about.
And I've seen, you know, The Shining.
It's a movie for old people, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I saw it and liked it. Yeah. So.
That was this The Shining is the closest I saw to like classic Jack Nicholson, but like mm-hmm. this completely kind of unaffected, just, you know, there's improvising a lot of dialogue. There's this, you know, it's kind of natural charisma. Like when Jack Nicholson smiles, I don't know how you smile that way.
No one can except him.
Yeah. It's like inviting, it's friendly, it's dangerous. And he brings all those qualities to, and he's just fascinating to watch. And I say, oh, this is why the guy's a star. From the moment he stepped onto the screen, I kind of loved this film. Yeah. Lots of problems.
And the film itself
it.
Picks up from that point too.
Yeah.
I think, as far as like,
it gets an energy.
Whatever plot this movie has sort of begins around that time, right?
And as Nicholson exits the film, it starts kind of like it's down. Like this film doesn't end so much as it just falls apart.
Yeah.
And I really liked it. Like I said, I was in for it just being a travelogue and kind of like this. I would say it's a nostalgic look at the hippie counterculture, except for I felt like it wasn't. There was this one review I read where it's like, it was the first movie made with the full knowledge of what was going on in the counterculture, but it had lost its innocence. Like, you don't watch this film and think, oh yeah, those hippies, they're going to change the world. It's more like, oh, these hippies are going to starve in the desert and they're going to be co-opted by...
A little bit.
commercial interests, and they're going to get steamrolled over by society, and they're going to become the baby. They're going to become the baby boomers that they are, and you know, lots of ink been spilt about that generation at this point.
Yeah, it's hard not to look at this movie and come away with two things. A, the knowledge that we have now just tells you, yeah, the hippie movement died out, and we really have basically nothing like it anymore in our modern culture. And also the question of, like, where does the freedom lie in our current society? And I think that's, like, the big question I came away from this movie with.
Yeah.
And it's kind of hard to pinpoint it.
Yeah. Do you want to start with that, kind of the big picture topics? Because I found it, as I was watching, I was thinking that, like, you're right. We don't have a true counterculture. Although I don't know. Maybe you can describe some of this stuff that we have today. But the attitude about, like, how the world is stacked against you, and that, like, individuals pay a price, and you know, unless you want to be willing to cuck out and be a wage slave, that you're going to get brutalized by society. That seemed like it, like, I think a lot of today's young generation feel that kind of that sense of, like, the American dream is dead.
Yeah.
And I was just shocked at kind of like, wow, how did we get to, like, the relative optimism of the 80s and 90s from this movie's place? Like, was it really just Star Wars came and gave America a national enema and had us thinking differently about things? And then we started doing coke and got our 401ks looking healthy, and everybody started feeling good until, you know, 9/11, and we've spiraled again. Like, I don't know, but there's something very interesting in the fact that, like, this is a movie about the baby boomer generation, and the current generation of kind of malaise, the millennials and the zoomers, are a similar baby boom. I don't know if you're aware of this, but, like, the millennials, like, as far as, like, the number of them, is a proliferation on kind of like the post-World War baby boom itself. And I wonder if somehow those go together. Like, this big, like, there's this big 50-year cycle in America. I've been looking at it like a 100-year cycle. Like, hey, you know, this kind of maps to kind of like where the Roaring Twenties are. We're going to go into some sort of Great Depression. You look at the racism and anti-immigrant fury that was going on at the same time, and it's kind of repeating. But maybe it's more of a 50-year cycle that we went through in the 60s and 70s, and we're starting to repeat again.
Yeah, no, that's one of the things I couldn't help but notice. Like, all these scenes where, you know, just for being different, they're being persecuted by, well, and I don't know how people of the South felt if they saw this film, because it's a very unflattering portrayal of the South.
Sure.
From, you know, the point of view of LA. So it's like, man, the further they get from their home, the less hospitable people are, the more hostile they are toward them. To the point where they couldn't even make it across the country without being murdered. I see a lot of division in our current country, obviously. And I look at it and I go, man, the makeup of this country is just so different, you know, across its many, many regions.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, can something like this be, can a territory this big really be governed in any reasonable way, or are we destined to, like, try and fail because of our differences? Or are we going to be able to maybe get our shit together and help a whole bunch of people live better lives?
It does seem the key, because you talk about what Southerns think, and that's something I think about a lot, because I think, you know, growing up in Southern Indiana, I feel a little bit of a kid. Like, I kind of bristle when people talk about, you know, poor white Southerners, and like they're all one person, they're all these, like, terrible people.
Right.
But there's a big grain of truth in that. And, like, what I was struck by is, like, the dialogue in this diner scene, which was largely improvised. Now, because I was thinking, like, man, this is coming awful strong when just because these people are kind of got long hair walking into here. But then there's also this element of, like, the high school girls being fascinated, and then, like, you got to wonder if the sheriff wasn't there, if they picked up them girls and they go up into the mountains and they part, quote unquote, party with them. But I kept on thinking, like, Willie Nelson started his career crooning in a suit with, like, a 1950s regulation haircut. And he became this pigtail swinging, dope smoking hippie. And that's largely been embraced by, like country western culture. Like most big country western stars have long hair and they're flashy and they talk about smoking dope and raising hell and drinking. And it's like this thing where people looking like the Easy Riders go through the South no problem, but other minorities, like the white culture has embraced and expanded this idea of what you can be as far as like a rebel, you know, yeah. and rebel against society, but you're still kind of rigidly, you know, locked into like race and ideas of gender. But like a lot of things that was said in those that diner scene, I feel like is said exactly the same thing, still about black people, especially about gay people, especially especially about trans people. Like there was all that shit. It's the same fucking bigotry. It just shifts target slightly. Like now white boys with long hair are cool, but everything else, no, we meant all that other stuff. Yeah. And I think that's I think something that's really fascinating. And I was talking about it with Cecily. Is one of the reasons like the civil rights movement worked so well is that you had this kind of like disaffected white culture that was being shit on by the establishment as hard as the minorities. So like there was a lot more, you know, like people like Jack Nicholson, ACLU lawyers willing to go to bat for them. And nowadays where like you can go for in the country as a white person and kind of be cool no matter how you look. Now there's like they've kind of wedged off the minorities a little bit. There's not that kind of common cause between the disaffected youth white culture and disaffected youth in Latino or black culture. Is that anything? Is that a thing?
I don't know, man. I don't know. But watching this movie, I definitely was thinking about it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's like I said, it's like, and there's such a sadness to it too. Like in Peter Fonda at the end, he talks about we blew it. And on the surface, they're talking about blowing their wad that they got, that they were going to retire in Florida just with a quick stop to, you know, Mardi Gras. But it's also pretty easy to read that as an indictment of the generation.
Oh, yeah. That's more so what I was thinking.
You know, you have all these people that like tuned in, dropped out and were looking for a big change in society. And what they did is they went out in the desert and they put on bad stage plays and they threw seeds in the dirt. And I thought that was such a clear contrast between the ranch they stopped at where they're able to repair their motorcycle. And he's like, hey, no, not every man can live off the land. It's hard. You should respect that. But this guy clearly has got his shit together, is organized, is not spending all of his day smoking weed and free loving and dropping acid and putting on bad stage plays. They're shoeing their goddamn horse and they're plowing the fields. You contrast that with the hippies that get a bunch of seeds, God knows what, throw them in the ground into the desert. Mm. And it's clear that like this commune that looks so beautiful and so perfect is like 3 months away from just completely exploding.
Yeah.
Absolutely. They're incapable, like that sex, drugs, and rock and roll is not something you can found the civilization on.
Yeah, it's like, you know, tuning in and dropping out is paramount to giving up, right?
Yeah.
Or tantamount to giving up. It's you're checking out of the society, and the society's going to go on without you, and without the force that you could have brought to effect change, you're now going to live your free life, you're going to die, and then the people who actually stuck around in society, you're going to have it worse off because you weren't there to help move things along in the direction you wanted them to go.
Yeah.
You know, and I like this movie is simultaneously romantic and tragic in my mind, because you have all these depictions of freedom, right? The open road is freedom. You know, they're beautiful shots when they're just driving down the road, not a care in the world. They got their money. That's all they need. They get to, you know, the hippie commune, which you said, I think effectively is like 3 months away from just exploding. And then they come across the rancher who's got his own freedom. The hippies are a different kind of freedom. They're more like mind, freedom of the mind, expanding their mind, stuff like that. And then you've got this, the freedom of living off the ranch, which I think is probably the closest thing to freedom that we might still have in modern society. Like homesteading is a big thing among like even a lot of, you know, people from parts of the country who are very much in on society.
I know two people I went to high school with that are homesteading right now in Southern Indiana.
I watch a bunch of YouTube videos of homesteaders like building their own house and doing like you know, having a farm,
solar panels,
kind of checking out,
some
yeah,
goats and some chickens, and
right. That's it feels like the closest thing to actual freedom we have. So I really like identify with this ranch guy. But at the same time, it feels like a dwindling a number of places that you can go to find that sort of freedom.
Right.
And that's the tragedy of it, is like this freedom, you know, is both disappearing and also leads them to a place where they're killed at the end.
Yeah. Right. You mentioned like the sceneries, and there's a couple stuff, like they drive through Monument Valley and there's just this improbable mix of like oranges and purple skies and salmon and pink colors. And it's so beautiful. Like, I think it's one reason that people do love America. Like, if you're live in some of the, and it's also like the map of people that like think you have a second head if you're talking about climate change maps so neatly into these beautiful places on the earth. Like, if you live, if you're a rancher around, you know, Monument Valley, or you live in the Appalachians or some of these other just like drop dead gorgeous areas, the idea that like you could affect the environment, like a person can like, you know, make some big change to the world, must seem ridiculous, because look at it. Like, you can, you know, you go to the top of a mountain, you look around, there's no one around. Like, how in the world could any of this be changed or affected? And it's like,
and then you go to Detroit or Flint.
Right.
And they've got a whole different perspective.
Exactly. Exactly. But I thought that the movie, you know, it's not the first time I've had that thought, but like when they're driving past this, like just amazing scenery after amazing scenery, it's like, good Lord, this is a beautiful country.
And just the natural beauty is something that is interesting in our modern filmmaking era, because like with all the CGI that we have now, and the ability to sort of produce our own kind of overwhelmingly beautiful landscapes, overwhelmingly beautiful shots, this is sort of a dying art. Like I'm trying to remember past Breaking Bad, like shots that I've seen of landscapes that have just blown me away. And it's getting harder and harder, I think, to impress people with that natural beauty, because of the fantastical things that they can see on film.
Yeah, Lord of the Rings is one I can think of. It really showcases New Zealand in a similar way.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But then you also look at like fucking Mordor, right? Which, you know, has its own beauty.
Yeah.
This is a very different, fantastical kind of beauty. And
made
like,
in a studio.
How much longer will we really appreciate the natural beauty on film? I don't know.
Man, I don't know. Because I just think that we're in a weird... So this... I didn't know anything about motorcycle movies. And I did a lot of reading because I thought this was fascinating. And apparently, like, the motorcycle movie is put on the map in the mid-1950s with Marlon Brando's The Wild Ones.
Okay.
And it became a genre, like the Western. And like I understand, I could be wrong because this is just me doing like 24 hours worth of research, but like I understand that this Easy Rider is kind of like the Unforgiven of Westerns, and that it's kind of like the last artistic gasp of this. There's been others since in the 70s, but this is like the high water mark, and like it probably won't, you know, like get back to that. But I wonder if like, you know, these travelogues, there's no reason why they wouldn't make money. I was struck that there's an interview with Dennis Hopper where they're talking about like his use of almost exclusively outdoor filming and using natural light. And he said that, you know, the reason he did that is because didn't have a lot of money, and turns out God's a great gaffer. Mm-hmm. Like, he really knows how to hang a light. And I don't know, like if I was a aspiring filmmaker, this seemed like an attractive genre. Because the other thing, let's talk about the making of this movie a little bit. Legend has it that Dennis Hopper's first cut of this movie was somewhere, people argue, between 4 and 5 hours long. And I read like in the Wikipedia article, like the huge sections of this movie that just gets deleted. And someone said, I can't remember why I read this, but they asserted that what they did is they just kept on taking out the plot details. Like, where did these guys come from? How did they get the drugs? Who cares? Just pull everything out except for the moments of action to propel them from one scene to another. And you have this kind of like minimalist, you know, again, it just feels like guys fucking around until the movie gets really real. And then the movie goes into this like long extended like bad trip in a Louisiana cemetery. And then it gets super real again and the movie's over. Mm-hmm. Like, you go from 5 hours of a cut to a movie that's barely 90 minutes long.
Yeah.
And like, first of all, I'd really love to see those other 2.5 hours. I've heard that they're just lost to history.
That's what I heard too.
It's not like you're going to find a coffee can full of this shit. But the other thing about it is that, like, I guess they were high constantly. Like, they're smoking real dope. They're snorting real coke. I don't think they actually took acid, because how the hell?
Yeah, I don't know how you would. Yeah, make a film on acid.
Yeah, yeah. Although maybe they were, because I would expect that those scenes were very, like, felt like a bad trip. But the dialogue was largely improvised.
Uh-huh.
Like, anytime you see these kind of quote-unquote redneck characters, they actually just pulled people from the local towns in Louisiana they're shooting in, yeah, and said, like the diner scene, the reason the dialogue is really over the top and insane is because they said their motivation was they're staring at these three guys who are suspected of raping an underage girl in town.
Mm-hmm.
So they were just, like, you know, teeing off on these guys.
Yeah.
But, like, yeah, Dennis Hopper and Peter Fonda just had this idea to write this script and shoot this. And they first tried with, like, an improvised ad hoc film crew,
mm-hmm,
that I guess Dennis Hopper got in fights with, and then he finally got some professional crew.
Yeah, man. Dennis Hopper, we need to come back. We need to circle back to him. But, like, I want to talk very briefly about Henry Jagslum, I think is his name.
The editor, Jagslum. Yeah.
He gets an editing consultant credit on this film, but in my mind, he made this movie.
Yeah.
This is like, you know, George Lucas coming in and doing a whole bunch of edits on The Godfather.
Or like, George Lucas having his ass saved on Star Wars. But I forget the two people that edited the hell out of Star Wars and landed it in A New Hope.
Right, because it seemed like, from what I read, that Dennis Hopper very much liked the cut that he made.
The 4+ 220 hour.
Minutes or whatever the hell it was.
Yep.
And that they sent him off on a vacation.
Yeah.
In order to get him out of the room so they could do a reasonable cut of this film.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually Henry Jagslum.
Mm-hmm.
Jaglum?
Found the statue of David in the block of marble that Dennis, yes, Hopper made.
Seemed like it to me. So I think he gets a lot of credit. And I think there's only one regard in which I felt the movie was missing details. And it's, I guess, why Peter Fonda's character, Wyatt, is so preoccupied with his own death throughout the film. Like, you can almost write it off as like, well, that's a human quality. That's being a human,
mm-hmm,
is knowing you're going to die and having to come to grips with that. But, yeah, like, there are a lot of specific things they do in this movie which make it feel to me like that's a big part of the plot. I just wish I knew more about that character.
Hmm. Yeah, Peter Fonda has an interesting role in here, because he's kind of like, he's clearly the hero of the film.
Yeah.
Like, Dennis Hopper seems like he's kind of a reactionary weirdo. Like, he's always just on the verge of flying off the handle. Like, there's a palpable menace to Dennis Hopper. Like, even when he's like super high and stoned, like, it seems like he might pull a knife and take your ear off, like, at any one of these scenes.
There's a scene. I'm not sure that Dennis Hopper did not menace a black man during one of these filming scenes in Mardi Gras.
Oh, yeah.
Like, there's a shot where it's real quick,
uh-huh,
but like, there's a group of black men standing around in the streets of New Orleans, and one of them, like, has grabbed Dennis Hopper's arm, and then he sort of just goes, whoa, 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 whoa. Because, mm-hmm, Dennis Hopper is giving him
the business,
the fucking stare of death. Uh-huh. I can't, like, if that's acting, that's a hell of a job. If it's just Dennis Hopper being high beyond belief and drunk off his ass and turning around to somebody he doesn't know doesn't have a knife or something,
right?
That sounds more realistic to me. But God, I was scared.
Oh,
in that moment.
There's a lot of menace in this film. Like, I kept on thinking, even before I knew they were high and drunk a lot of the filming, like, some of the shit they get up to on motorcycles. As a person, I'm a motorcyclist myself, and I'm very religious about wearing my leathers, wearing my helmet. These guys are not wearing a helmet at all. They're doing all kinds of crazy shit, cross-leg drive. They're getting way too close to each other, and they're
standing
all, and this
on
thing
their
is,
bikes.
This thing is moving down the road. I'm like, you couldn't make this film today because no one would write the insurance for it.
Right.
Well, I guess you could do it indie style, and like they did, but like, I just, like, I kept on like, my God, it's a miracle that no one died in the filming of this, because any that jackassery happens and the bikes go down, like, one of those two guys is going to get brain damage for sure, if not worse.
But
there's a lot of that just, like, you know, and there's also a lot of like dangers that do happen to them. They get beset, they get beat up, they get killed in the end. Mm-hmm. But the whole film works, I think, because even in the parts where they're just fucking around, you know, the movie opens with an almost 10-minute long, essentially silent scene about them making a drug connection from Mexico to L.A. Mm-hmm. And I don't know anything about 1969 and how that works. But like, you know, when they're down there in Mexico and they're just, you know, got cash money and they're buying coke, that felt fucking dangerous.
There's always a chance a drug deal can go wrong.
Hell yeah.
Always.
Language barriers, law barriers, going over international borders, and then going into L.A. And are they going to get, because these guys didn't seem particularly bright. I guess the backstories are supposed to be stuntmen.
Oh, are they?
Yeah, but they're like doing motorcycle stunts and stuff, and the some of the cut scenes is the establishing of them doing this motorcycle show, and the promoter stiffs some money, and they're like, "Hey, man, this is fucking bullshit. You know what? We should sling some dope. They'll go down, cut out the middleman, go right down to Mexico."
They cut out those scenes, right?
Oh yeah, they're gone.
Okay, I was gonna say, did
that's part of the stuff, because I read a description of like what are all the things that kind of got cut.
Is that why he's in this Captain America suit?
It could be like he's like a little bit of an evil Knievel style stuntman. But I don't know the Evil Knievel. Like, I don't know which inspired which, because like, Evil Knievel was to me it's like a 70s and early 80s thing, so he might have come after this.
Okay,
I don't know.
I mean, this movie was inspiring to a lot of people.
Oh, dude.
Generation of Hollywood. It's a thing. It's a way of a movement called New Hollywood.
Oh, in the late 90s.
Sprung up from this and a couple other films.
In the late 90s and early 2000s, I was really big in kind of motorcycle culture, and I read a lot of motorcycle magazines and books. And these fucking, like at the time, 40-year-old dudes couldn't go an issue without a sick, easy rider. You know, like they worship this film. They worship like the idea, like you can tell these guys watched this in college and they just fantasize about, man, with my best friend, I'm out driving a sick rig and I'm smoking dope and I stop by and like every woman is all in every town is always into me and they're down for free love. It's kind of like their Scarface. It's like, you know, motorcycle guys this is their Scarface, even though things end terribly. Everything else up to that seems like, in fact, even dying young in that way is kind of inspiring and probably exciting in a way.
Yeah, it's got that James Dean appeal to it, right?
Like, yeah.
That dangerous side
of
being a rebel.
But being influential from a filmmaking standpoint, there's a couple of innovations. I guess like the idea of mounting a camera to the front of a motorcycle to get that like going down the road first person shot had not been done before. The fact that they were super broke and they couldn't afford original score. They intended to have an original score, but they couldn't. So Dennis Hopper just tacked on like his favorite tunes of these scenes, and the studios loved it. And using popular music to like outside of a musical context is like an innovation.
And I was shocked when I started hearing all these songs I'm so familiar with. I'm like, God,
and they're
damn,
so perfect for it too.
That song and that song, Born to Be Wild, like. All these fucking songs. I know Jimi Hendrix showed up at one point. And I'm like, this must have cost a fucking fortune.
They got all done for under $1 million.
Yeah, it turns out like licensing songs was actually not super expensive back then because people didn't do it as much.
Yeah, and well,
and now you want a Jimi Hendrix song, you're gonna pay millions alone for that song.
Sure, sure.
Yeah, apparently the budget on this thing was something like $400,000 to film it, and they spent $1 million on the music, which. Mm-hmm. Makes sense.
I mean, it makes the film. Like, can you imagine with this film of like a conventional kind of like, you know, twangy or hippie type of soundtrack? I guess it kind of does. It, you know, this
sometimes.
Is period accurate music.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But no, I love that. Like there's so many, like the Born to Be Wild biking montage is amazing. Very interesting editing. Like we praise the editing, like I guess as much as you can praise chainsawing 2.5 hours of dead weight from a movie.
So I think some of the editing doesn't work though.
The scene transitions, what were they thinking?
They're terrible. I hate them.
Like every single time you with few exceptions, when you transfer from one scene to another, you've got this kind of like the Kill Bill, wah, 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 except for there's no music and they just rock back and forth between the two scenes and you're in the next one.
Yeah. Feels disjointed and wrong to me, and I don't know what they were going for with that, but also
it's very distinctive.
It is very distinctive. I've never seen it done since.
I've never seen a movie with these kind of scene transitions.
Probably a reason for that. The other really fucking rough edit, which I love the shot, I love what it represents, like but Peter Fonda throwing that watch on the ground is one of the most poorly edited insert shots I've ever seen. It's just god awful.
I wonder if they actually filmed it's like months. Like this is the editor. Like I need this and I don't have it. I'm just gonna go out and
Because man, they just didn't have the footage they needed to cut that shot or something.
Yeah.
Or they botched it so many times because this is back in an era when you're doing edits by cutting tape.
Yeah.
And snipping it and putting it back together again. So
which
like
makes it mean those scene transitions must have been a bitch to put together too. Like they crawled through miles of broken glass to get something that's just bad.
But I do like that moment when he throws the watch on the ground. It's sort of representative of like his ties to the rigidity, the structure of modern as it was in the 60s society, right?
But he's still hip about time, man. He never loses, you know, the you got to get the Mardi Gras on time.
It's true.
There's a lot of other, like, you know, as tight as this movie is, relatively speaking, there's a couple shots where I still like there one time where we went full circle around the hippie lodge.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what the fuck are these people looking at? They weren't looking at anything.
Nothing, apparently.
We spent 3.5 minutes go around the group to just have this guy say this stupid prayer about, you know, making a place to take a stand that they're going to be running from in 3 months when the crops don't come. And oh, man, there's a lot of interesting, like I said, like this is like a commentary on hippie culture without like the innocence, because the whole like we're parading without a permit, man. Like, look, I don't like jackbooted thug police overreach as much as anybody, but you can't go riding your choppers through a parade, man. You can't do that.
There's a place where you
can't pick up high school girls in front of the local constabulary and think that's going to work out in your favor.
No, there is a place where you can, and it's called Mardi Gras. And they just weren't there yet.
Yeah, they tried to make Mardi Gras happen at the state line of life. The thing is, also,
they're living that Mardi Gras life a little too early.
Louisiana is famously corrupt. Like, you don't want to get, as an out-of-towner, you don't want to get pulled over in Louisiana for any fucking reason.
I wouldn't. Although it's hard to get pulled over in Louisiana.
How's that?
It's open alcohol law, open container laws, or not what they are in other parts of the country.
If you do, strap in, because it's about to get fucking real.
A couple other things on the editing. There's actually a really cool shot. That final shot, which I have to imagine was pretty hard on the small indie budget they had, must have been a helicopter shot, because they go directly from like a close-up on the bike.
Oh, yeah.
That's the final one. Burning and exploding, and they bring it up and over this big river, and I was pretty impressed by that shot in what is a very low budget film.
Yeah, it's either a helicopter shot or maybe like but even like setting up a crane shot like that would be expensive on that location, because that's again just some back road in Louisiana, from what I could tell.
I don't think it was a crane shot, because they show a lot more of that street. And there was nothing on that street.
Yeah,
like you wouldn't have had the tech at the time to take out all of the fucking dollies, the crane itself, like all that shit.
Yeah. I want to talk about Jack Nicholson some more.
Okay.
Because I liked everything about him. I liked when he showed up in jail. I liked how he kind of slick talked his way out of and got the guys off for, you know, of their parade without a permit for just a $25 fine. Mm-hmm. I love how he goes, like, he's clearly an alcoholic, and that's all he can handle. And these guys are passing around a reefer, and it seems like he's bought into that reefer madness. He's like, I don't know about this, guys. And they're like, it's not like that at all. So he tries it.
It leads to stuff, harder stuff.
And then he just instantly slips into this like insane alien conspiracy theory.
Yeah.
Which I love how Dennis Hopper plays it too. Like, he vacillates between this like wild-eyed, childlike wonder at the story he's being told to like then total incredulity. Like, this is a crackpot idea, man. What do you think about that? It's a crackpot.
And our antiquated systems, that quote is like this movie's precious bodily fluids.
Yeah, I was about to say the same thing when you said it like that. It's like, that's very, and then Jack Nicholson's first drink of the morning, where he takes a long slug of Jim Beam, and he goes, and I quote, Nick, flop, 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 Indians.
What the fuck?
It's like, instantly iconic. Like every time I first take a shot of something, I'm going to do that from here on out.
It's the most ridiculous reaction I've ever seen to someone taking a drink of whiskey.
He made a fucking meal out of that first drink of the day.
Absolutely.
And then the whole, like, Jack was like, oh, I don't know, you got a helmet? Oh, I got a helmet, all right. And this is his gold goddamn Notre Dame helmet that he's got. Looks like it's three sizes too small.
He's waving around meat on his motorcycle. Shh. Yeah, Jack Nicholson is nominated for a supporting Oscar, or a supporting actor role.
He's the reason people remember this film. Like, I mean, I don't know.
He's one of the reasons, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know that this film is as influential without this kind of, like, just bananas performance by him.
It's pretty bananas. I found myself not being super impressed by the performance early on. But as the movie continued, I was more impressed. Like, I was actually really impressed by his performance in the scene in the diner when they're being menaced. Because It was a very, like, understated corner of your eye. Like, not quite sure how these other guys would play. Like, I really thought he did a nuanced
It felt very uncomfortable. I knew how this movie ended because of the, you know, the new Pope spoils the ending for you.
Right.
And I'm kept, you know, that filled the... I didn't know that they both died. That's the one thing I wasn't sure of. But that pre-knowledge kind of filled the movie with already had a lot of kind of, I think, foreboding and dread. And like you said, that he has a death premonition at the whorehouse.
Yeah.
But that scene in the diner, like, was extremely stressful, where the way they cut these guys, just like, you know, making these comments, and you could, I was like, Dennis Hopper, as you said, is kind of plays this as a hothead. There's a couple times where, like, that first hippie that's like the part member of the commune gives him a little bit of shit. And I'm like, I don't know that Dennis Hopper is the type of guy you want to give shit to.
Yeah.
Like, he might be the rare guy that, like, gets, like, worked up on weed and starts swinging at you. Uh-huh.
And then you've got Peter Fonda, Wyatt, sitting there. And I'm not sure how he's going to react. I'm not sure if he's even going to want to leave. Like, he might be a little too cool to get out of what is, like, clearly becoming a bad situation.
Yeah, like, I'm not going to move. I'm not doing anything wrong. Fuck him.
Right.
But then
they're talking about, like, oh, that guy's a big one. Like, you know, they're sort of, like, sizing doing the math here, right? Like, if things break bad, how bad are they going to break? And who's it going to break bad for, us or them?
And especially, like, 30 seconds in this fight, you'll be fighting the entire town.
Yes.
Like, you know, anyone that was kind of on, like, maybe they're not saying anything out loud, but, like, you start swinging on the good old boys.
And one of them's the sheriff. Like,
right. It's going to be, you're going to be done. You're going to get one of them razor blade haircuts and probably a lot worse.
A lot deeper than you want it to be,
I don't know. I thought it was... There's some of this, the legend around the story making, I thought. There's a quote by Terry Southern. He's the third credited co-writer. And it seems like that what happened is he wrote the film, and then... I'll just read the quote.
So,
he says...
So he's the guy, first off, he's the guy who wrote Dr. Strangelove.
I was going to say, he's the one credited as a co-writer with Kubrick.
Yes.
And he's kind of got... I'm not familiar with a lot of his other films, but... I got the impression reading his bio that he's kind of like a 60s Tarantino, like a Kevin Smith. He's like known for like crackling dialogue.
Uh-huh.
And when like he was the sole credited writer until this film started winning awards at Cannes, and all of a sudden like Peter Fonda and Dennis Hopper wanted to get their beaks wet. And here's a quote from Terry Southern I found in an interview. It says, you know, if Dennis Hopper improvised a dozen lines and six of them survived the cut it room floor, he'll put in for a screenplay credit. And he said, this is one of the greatest burns of all times. It would be almost impossible to exaggerate Dennis Hopper's contribution to the film, but by God, he manages to do it every time. Like, clearly, this film wouldn't have happened without him, but holy shit, does this guy take in his inch and ran it a mile?
I don't know. Like, how cool of a guy Dennis Hopper is.
Because I think the shot composition, obviously the score, I mean, that's all probably Dennis Hopper.
Yeah, I don't want to underestimate his role in the film. Mm-hmm. I just think he probably overstates it.
Yeah.
You know, if Terry Southern is saying it, it's probably true.
And if it was just up to Dennis Hopper and Peter Fonda, does this movie get made? Does it ever make it out of the editing room? Does, like, the studio look at this and be like, you want us to put this 4.5 movie out in the drive-ins and theaters? Like, get the fuck out of here.
Yeah.
Is the editor...
And even if they do it, do audiences get bored? Like,
yeah, yeah.
You know, there's so many questions. And I look at the history of the making of this film. One of the... Actually, the role of Jack Nicholson of... George was supposed to be played by Rip Torn, who was also friends with a lot of the cast and crew here.
Yep.
And they had a meeting over dinner, and Dennis Hopper and them sat down with Rip Torn, and they were trying to hash out everything, and they got into a physical altercation over dinner, and Rip Torn ended up not refusing to be in the film, and so they got Jack Nicholson. But like, Dennis Hopper seems like a volatile person.
Yes.
I don't know that I care much for Dennis Hopper as a human being, but
yeah,
he made a hell of a film here.
Always have a soft spot for him for Speed.
He's great Bowser.
Hot quiz, hotshot. Who played the greatest Bowser in cinematic history? It's fucking Den Hopper. Yeah, I was surprised at how much. I was actually, when I first was thinking about doing this, I'm like, man, it's a 1969 film. I know it's like kind of going to probably throwback editing stuff. I'm not sure what Jim would think of it, but I don't know. We haven't talked much about like the post-Nicholson shenanigans. Like, they get down to this almost as a tribute to him. Like, well, we got to make it to the whorehouse that he told us about. They get down there.
Madame Tinker Toys.
Yeah. They rent a lady's passion. Somehow this turns into a 24-hour date to one of the mausoleum heavy cemeteries in New Orleans, and things are going so great. They decide to quarter up that acid that was given to them like half a movie ago.
Yeah. My favorite line in the film is probably when she tells him, "I don't drink," and he says, "You want to go do Mardi Gras?" Like, wait. This doesn't work.
Yeah.
"I don't drink, but let's go to Mardi Gras."
Yeah.
Also, "I don't drink, but I'll drop acid, no problem."
Yeah. What does this, I did, and that there, the movie, it's like, what are they trying to do there with this bad trip? Is this just kind of like, just increase the tension that we're feeling? Or is it another kind of like, everyone thinks about acid as like, oh, this great consciousness expanding thing that's always a wholly benevolent thing. But this is the ultimate in like set and setting.
Don't drop
powerful acid in a creepy ass cemetery with two prostitutes that you just met the night before.
Yeah.
Maybe in a more comfortable setting with people that you feel comfortable with. But I don't know. Like, it's another kind of like, I felt like there's a lot of like unmasking the hippie bullshit in this movie.
Okay, maybe so. Yeah, I mean, it's clearly a bad trip. I think there might be a rape that happens during this. I think Billy might have raped
her.
And I know that when Wyatt, when Peter Fonda is sort of cradling the Madonna there and saying like, "I hate you. Why'd you leave?" Like, talking about his mother.
Mm-hmm.
He was goaded into that sort of by Dennis Hopper. He didn't want to do this particular version of the scene, but he said basically like, think about your mom and say what you would say to her if you were to speak to her, because she killed herself when she was 42.
And that was, then Hopper or Fonda was 10 years old at the time.
Yeah.
So like, they're channeling some bad juju here.
Absolutely. I mean, this is a bad trip for both the character of Wyatt and the human being of Peter Fonda.
I'm trying to think of like, do I recommend this movie? Because like, if you're much younger than us, it might be kind of like a people our age going back to watch Casablanca and Citizen Kane. Like, if you can put yourself in the headspace of back in the time and see how innovative it is, and see how like, how many pop culture references spawn from that, you can still have a good time. But like, it's otherwise plotting, the acting is very hammy by modern standards, the editing is, you know, ponderous. I wonder if you're much like, if you're a 20 something, I don't know, do you get at it? Like, you might be too far away from this generation, or like the way the film's kind of grainy, like, they just don't make messy films like this. Like, maybe even like Mandy, which we saw last year, that Nick Cage kind of like drug slasher. It's shot in this style, but the film stock is so much better, and it's so much better preserved, and it sounds better.
I couldn't believe how shitty the film looked.
Yeah.
But like I think I disagree. I think people, maybe especially young people, might like this movie because it is so counterculture. And I think of like Casablanca and shit like that is not counterculture in any way, right?
Yeah.
There's nothing subversive. And when I look at the movies that, you know, so many people like today, and I'm like, oh, you take a movie like this and you compare it to something like a Star Wars movie, a modern Star Wars movie, or the Marvel movies, and like, there's just no comparison. There's nothing challenging or interesting about those films in any way.
Yeah,
that's, and this movie encourages
it's
you.
It's organic versus manufactured.
Absolutely. And I look at Casablanca and I think, oh, that's manufactured. It's well manufactured. Mm. And maybe the cinematography was innovative, or maybe perhaps a little bit of the acting style was a little, you know, a little updated for the time. But like, this has a real vibe to it, a real countercultural, like edgy, dangerous, like I feel something when I come away from this movie.
Yeah. And this is like, you know, this is like,
I think affects generations throughout time.
Yeah. And it's post method. You don't have like the more stagey acting. Like the acting is, especially amongst the principals, you know, these are very talented actors giving it their all. I wonder, so what do you think the other, I guess, market is like? I don't know what women think of this movie. I have a sample size of one that hated it.
You hated it? Oh,
because,
man.
Because it is just two dudes doing bro stuff, and they're like having sex with women that are nothing but willing receptacles for them. They then do the same thing with I think Roger Ebert made he's quoting someone else, but he's like, the great fascination of putting prostitutes in these types of roles is like, in real life, they're easy to get and they're easy to get rid of when they're no longer needed. So like, you want these guys to mac on women, hook them with prostitutes, but like, there's no real character there. There's no internal, like, personhood to those roles. It's just all, I'm not saying that you can't be fascinated by that, 'cause I'm fascinated by just watching women do shit.
I wonder what the,
but
the
we've
equivalent.
Had a lot longer time to watch dudes just putter around and do stupid shit than have just watching women do the same thing.
I wonder what the equivalent of this film would look like made by women.
Thelma
and
Louise?
For women.
Like, is that, like, that's a very, it has a lot of the same bones. Like, it's definitely has more of a story to hang on to it. Like, you know, there's a clear beginning, and whereas, you know, this is kind of like just coming in halfway through, but it's similar. You know, they both both the protagonists die at the end, but on their own terms.
I mean, like this movie up until a day ago, I have not seen that film.
I don't know. It's like, and then it feels very abrupt. Like, I would have been genuinely shocked because, you know, we're around the 85 minute mark when this happens. And Dennis Hopper flips off the redneck. And I guess I interpret it as the redneck accidentally shot him. Like, they hit a bump and the gun goes off and then they kill this guy and they're like, well, might as well finish off the others and not leave any witnesses. Maybe they did deliberately, but I think that would have come a real shock to me, especially in like 69. Like, the protagonists are just going to die futilely, unremarked, unloved by anyone.
No, it's not a happy ending.
They blew it.
Yeah, they blew it.
Yeah, I was really impressed by this film. Anything else we want to say? Or
there are some truly, truly ridiculous hats in this movie. This might be the last thing I want to talk about. But so Phil Spector is in this movie.
Phil Spector is in this
film. He's the guy who buys the drugs from them at the airport.
Yeah, in L.A., yeah.
Yeah, and he's wearing a god-awful ridiculous hat.
Uh-huh.
It's like, I don't even know how to describe it. A canvas bucket turned upside down with an awful rim. It's... Mm-hmm. And then they're the guy on the ranch, when he sits down for the meal, takes off his god-awful cowboy hat. It's like 4 feet tall, has a brim the size of Texas.
Yeah, it's like a tricorn version of a 10-gallon hat.
Yeah, it's real bad. Yeah. And then the principal actors here are wearing bad hats. I mean, you got Dennis Hopper in the Bushman's hat.
Sure. I thought that's kind of iconic.
It's the most acceptable hat in this entire
film.
And
it looks like, with his hair and mustache and beard, like his whole whole look that Dennis Hopper's got is pretty, I thought it was pretty cool.
I thought it mostly worked. But then you've got, like we mentioned, Jack Nicholson in the football helmet
and the suit
on the motorcycle, which is just completely ridiculous.
Yep.
What is it with headgear in this movie?
I don't know. They couldn't afford to buy like good helmets.
I mean, fashion in the 60s was pretty bad.
That's true.
To begin with.
So. Although Peter Fonda's jacket is pretty fucking sweet, too.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, that's the thing. Is like, I don't like choppers at all. I think they're not my aesthetic. Mm-hmm. But I'm not going to sit there and pretend like these bikes aren't fucking cool.
Oh, yeah. When that guy says that's a great looking machine or whatever, as they're rolling the bike into the barn to change the tire, it gets sort of a hero shot for a second. And it's a gorgeous bike.
Yeah, like that lacing on a seat and just like I think that's the thing. It's like
side of it.
This is where they should have stopped with choppers, but like the trend continued with ape hangers higher and higher and forks more and more raked, and like these are still semi-functional
handlebars
machines.
That go so far up that they have to come back down before you can use them as handlebars.
Like it's a ridiculous and non-functional. And whereas this, it's like still the other thing is like when you're I saw this as a motorcyclist. I was watching them and like, man, those suspensions are so fucking unforgiving. Like when Jack Nicholson talks about losing his kidneys getting off there, like I can't even imagine what it'd be like to spend 500 miles on a back seat. Because every time you see him going over to bump, like there is no like it might have been a hardtail, like no suspension at all, because it would just look brutal.
My impression is that they go all the way from L.A. to Florida, maybe.
I don't need to make it out of Louisiana. They go from L.A.
They say, they're probably not going to make it past the line, but like maybe they didn't.
I mean, the road that they got shot on in real life is in Louisiana. So they were going to go from L.A. to Florida to retire and then make a stop in Mardi Gras because that was...
Which, again, is not in the movie.
Right.
You have no idea where they're trying to end up.
Right. Because I was thinking, like, I'd forgot, like, by the time I'd gotten into this movie and they're talking about, we got to get to Mardi Gras. I'm like, are they going to sell the coat? Because, like, they also talked about, like, our life is in this gas tank. I'm like... I completely forgot about Phil Spector buying the drugs.
Yeah.
So, and that's just being cash in the tank. Cause I'm like, do they have to get to Mardi Gras at a particular time to meet a dealer? But no, just Billy wanted to do Mardi Gras.
Want to see Mardi Gras, yeah.
And on the way to Florida, they got halfway there and then they're not going to make it any further.
Yeah. And I like that Mardi Gras was sort of a bastion of camaraderie. Like in this otherwise very hostile area of the country, at least toward them.
Yeah. They found this island of, because, you know, Mardi Gras has always been kind of, you know, loose in terms of morality, in terms of sobriety, in terms of, you know, sexual dynamics and gender. Mm-hmm. Like, that's kind of its thing. So, you know, these guys with pretty long hair and, you know, outlandish garb fit right into that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's that you can parade without a permit down there.
You sure can.
Just not in any some random Louisiana town. Anything else you got to say?
Nope.
Great movie. If you haven't ever seen it, I think it's worth your while checking out. It's short. It's gore. If nothing else, you can just tune out the dialogue and look at the visuals and listen to the music and have a groovy time, man. Until the next movie, I'm Aaron.
I'm Jim.
See ya. Don't bogart that joint, my friend.